Today, we've got a couple of expats from the UK who met in Spain, and they launched an Amazon business together that's projected to do about $2 million this year. And we're going to talk about some of their unique strategies, such as sourcing products in the USA. How cool is that? Pretty cool, I think. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Serious Sellers Podcast by Helium 10. I am your host, Bradley Sutton, and this is the show that's completely BS-free, unscripted and unrehearsed, organic conversation about serious strategies for serious sellers of any level in the e-commerce world. And today, as we've been doing lately, we start off with a serious strategy for serious sellers out there. So one quick thing I want to show you, here in Magnet, you can enter in any keyword and get a list of long tail keywords that have that keyword as a root. So for example, right here, I can enter Gothic decor into Magnet. And then once I get these results of thousands of keywords, I want to go ahead and filter out the Smart Complete. Now, Smart Complete is going to give me all of the broad match keywords that could potentially come up in a phrase or broad campaign for PPC. But now I've got 151 long tail keywords of Gothic decor that are potential PPC matches or things that I could use in my listing. So make sure to use Magnet. For more information, go to h10.me/Magnet. Now we have a couple of sellers on here. Is it, have you guys, either of you been on the podcast before?
First time.
No. First time. All right.
Invite for a long time. I'm not gonna lie.
All right. So we got Tom and Alex coming from, now you were just telling me you're originally from the UK, but you both live in Spain now.
Yes, we're expats. We came here about 8 years ago. We met here. We came separately and then met here and had a shared kind of passion for business and then became business partners. And then, yeah, it's hard to leave. Once you leave the UK and you get blue skies every day, it's tricky to go back. Even though you can see our complexion, we're not quite made for Spain, to be honest, but it's good fun.
So did you know each other in UK?
No.
No. No. Were you guys born and raised, each of you?
I'm from a place called Bath in the southwest of the UK. Did a small town, like super nice, but once you leave and go to somewhere a bit bigger, it's I kind of knew it was destined for bigger things. So yeah, I got out and came here.
Did you do university in that area or?
No, I went traveling, saw the world, and then went back to it for a bit and got bored. So I got out and came over here.
Okay. And Alex, what about you?
I'm from a little bit further north. Yeah, I'm from Manchester. Just outside of Manchester, yeah. So I went to university in Manchester and then left the UK.
Manchester City had a rough time this week. Not sure if you care about that.
But. Yeah, it's funny because years ago, nobody ever mentioned Manchester City. When I went abroad or anywhere, they'd say Manchester United, and now it's everything is Manchester City. But yeah.
Things are different now. And how about you? Did you do university?
I did, yeah. I went to university in Manchester, yeah. Complete waste of time. Shouldn't have done it, but...
Well, what were you studying over there?
I studied marketing.
Marketing, okay. Well, at least it's somewhat... It's not like, you know, you pick something like philosophy or something completely useless, you know?
Yeah.
And then now both of you just were like, just independently, obviously, like you said, you didn't know each other. You're like, I want to move to Spain or...
I used to arrange bachelor parties for a living when I was in the UK. So... A bit part of the job, but one of the perks was you go and visit your destinations that you sell. So I went to Bulgaria, went to Portugal, went to Poland, came here for a trip, like a research trip. And you do like a one-man band stag do with the kind of providers that are local. And I just loved it. So on the way home on the plane, I just wrote after a note to myself saying move to Barcelona. And then about 6 months later, I was on the way back out again to do it here.
Okay. Okay. Now how is it for somebody from the UK, you know, post Brexit and everything, like, is there different things about, you know, can you just like pick up and move there or like, do you have to have some kind of resident card? Like how does that even work?
It is different actually. Like when me and Tom moved over, you could literally just turn up. Like I turned up with a backpack and that's it. And like, didn't need anything at all. But now if you want to move over here, you need, I mean, they've just introduced a digital nomad visa, which I hear is actually pretty good in terms of tax and stuff like that. So they've made it a little bit easier. But before they introduced that, like it was really difficult.
Now, Tom, when you first moved over there, was this bachelor party business what was your, you know, making allowing you to
that was a bread
make
and
a living, or did you have another job, or what was going on there?
Yeah, I was arranging bachelor. So I didn't tell a lot of people in the city that I met because bachelor and bachelorette parties are quite annoying, as I'm sure most people listening, they've seen them out and about. So I wasn't shouting about what I did for a living to a lot of people that I met, but I felt like I was doing a bit of a service because I'd always tell them to go where we didn't go. They were going to the touristy areas, and then opened up another company around that, a bit like Takeshi's Castle or like Total Wipeout, which is a quite popular TV show. Maybe like a little bit of American Ninja Warrior kind of vibe. Open the activity center where it's all like inflatable games and you kind of fight in sumo suits and that kind of thing. So that was all kind of going well up until COVID, and then COVID killed it. It kind of killed the business. And then that's when me and Alex actually, we joined up during lockdown, is when I just started learning Amazon kind of flat out and replaced my 9-to-5 with this. Listened to this podcast a lot, watched a lot of YouTube, watched a lot of your series and other people. And been kind of doing Amazon nonstop ever since then.
Okay, so when you say you started Amazon, was it there in Spain, in UK or USA, or where was your marketplace?
Yeah, so I originally started, I think it was like the back end of 2019, I think around then, or early 2019 maybe. I started selling in Amazon Spain, which in hindsight was probably a bit of a mistake, but obviously I was a little bit wet behind the ears. Started selling in Amazon Spain, and then it was when Tom and I joined up, we moved across to the UK market, we had a brand there. That did quite well, but then we launched a product in the US market and that just took off. And then that turned into the brand that we've got now, which is doing, yeah, 7 figures annually.
Now how again, did you guys meet at one of the bachelor parties, or how did this, where's your guys out, your bromance origin story here?
Do you know what happened actually? If people are watching this, we get asked if we're brothers quite a lot. So the guy I used to work for had a bar in the city center, and my then girlfriend was working behind the bar, and Alex was doing some work for the company, doing some like casual tour guide stuff, I think he was doing. And he came into the bar, and she at a glance thought it was me that came in. And then I came in a bit later on, and I looked at him across the bar, and I was like, does this guy know that he looks quite a lot like me? It's a bit weird. And we started chatting. We had some mutual friends, and the expat community here is like fairly small. So yeah, started kind of socializing together. And then look, being in Barcelona in your 20s is, it's a bit like you're a kid in a sweet shop. It's kind of nonstop options to go out and have fun and do kind of the parties every day and things. So we did that, and then we started chatting about business. Alex told me, obviously I was telling him about my kind of inflatable games business, and then Alex was telling me about Amazon, and I was just like desperate to get involved. I wanted another income stream, and he was in a position where wanted to grow the brand but needed some help with cash flow, and I was like, I'm down to come in. So I think we went and played golf one day, and I was just like, on the way there, I was thinking, I'm gonna pitch him today. Like, I want to get in there, and kind of went on from there. We partnered up. We very nearly launched a travel brand in just prior to COVID. We were looking at.
Okay, I was about to say that wasn't exactly a good niche to get into during COVID, yeah. Right there.
No, it was actually travel pillows. We had some samples made. This is when we didn't really know what we were doing at that point, and we were really kind of set on that, and then. Yeah, obviously when COVID hit, we luckily hadn't gone into that. But some of the brands that we were looking at the time, they actually come up on my Instagram ads today. I saw one of the brands, they're called Turtle, and they're kind of everywhere at the minute. They just launched, I think, when we were looking at it. So maybe we could have rode the storm and made it. But yeah, we went in a different direction, and now we're in the pet space in the US instead.
The first product that you guys came up with, are you guys still selling that today?
No, we're not. I actually have one here on my desk somewhere. Oh no, yeah, it's in the other room. So the very first product that we launched, well, I launched it in Spain, was a man's wallet. There we go. And then we developed this one. This one was our second one that we launched in the UK. Actually went really well. It went really well. And then we had the listing suspended, some sort of stupid claim, to do with, I don't know, the materials we were using that got suspended. So that was the first time that we experienced a bit of a hiccup in the journey, I guess.
You said you started selling that one in Spain first?
Yeah, so initially in Spain, and then it was when I partnered up with Tom that we moved into the UK market, yeah.
What the plan was, Bradley, was we launched into the UK with the wallet, and then we were like, look, we need to finance the growth of this. So in the meantime, on Helium 10, I found a product in the US, and we weren't really looking at the US, and we didn't know why, because it's, we're not touching the products, obviously, the beauty of Amazon being remote. So found this one product where only one other person was selling it on the whole of Amazon. And we saw their listing. We were like, look, we can definitely do a better job than this. We didn't really know much about the niche, but did some research. We ordered that product just to finance the growth of the wallets was the idea. And then when the wallet listing got into issues and it was banned for like 8 weeks, the first product we launched in the US in the other niche, that started really taking off. So we just took a real look at that niche properly, and it was a much bigger opportunity than we thought. That product is still selling today. Yeah, it's been selling now for 3.5 years, nonstop. We've added on another, I don't know, dozen products on top.
What was your peak year of sales? Which year, and then how much was it?
So last year was about 1.4 million. I think we went about 250,000 year one, about 900,000 year two. Last year was 1.4. And then I think this year, we'll be up over 2 this year. As we've been doing this at the same time, we've built out like Honest FBA. So we've got our kind of YouTube channel and Twitter following and things. So we built a kind of coaching course and community alongside it, which has been really nice. But obviously it's running two businesses at once is obviously comes with its challenges. So we're looking to focus, kind of maximize both opportunities over the next couple of years.
So if you hit 2 million this year on Amazon overall, what percentage is US compared to other marketplaces?
99%, I think.
Also, so you're out of UK and Spain pretty much, and just all in.
Yeah. So why
is that? You know, like somebody might think like, well, you're in Europe, you got to take advantage of being based in Europe, and it's you could be crushing it over there. So why would two Europeans be focusing on US market?
I mean, the long and short of it is the pet brand that we've got, there's not really any demand in Europe for this particular like pet. There's a lot of demand in the US market, but there's not in the UK. So once we saw the success of this product we launched in the US market, and also we realized like actually it's super easy to sell into the US market, even if you're based in Europe. Like it was literally just making the account, you know, linking it up, and then we were off. So once we saw the success of that first product, we had to make a decision, like, do we go all in on that one? Because obviously we didn't have unlimited funds at that point. So we decided to basically sell through all of the stock in the UK with the wallet brand. And we thought the opportunity was bigger with the pet brand in the US market. So yeah, that was the crux of it. Basically, we saw a bigger opportunity, but we have sold a little bit in the UK market, but it ended up not really being worth it because the demand was just way too small.
And you only focus on Amazon? Are you doing a website, TikTok, Walmart, anything like that?
Bit of D2C. We've been like focused on that over the last 6 months or so. We wrote actually about 50, or I say we wrote, we bought about 50 to 100 blog articles last year. So a bit of an SEO play. That literally in the last couple of weeks, that's really started hitting. So we're ranking around page one of Google for quite a lot of the terms that we were targeting now. So we're getting a decent amount of growth D2C. And we're moving at the moment into some subscription-based products.
Those blogs, is it linking to a website or is it linking to Amazon?
Well, yeah, our website at the moment. Okay. We have also done some backlink work with our Amazon listing, which actually is works fairly well as well. So that's been pretty interesting. We've ranked fairly well off that. And then, yeah, plan is with this year, like subscription-based products, which obviously subscribe and save on Amazon, but also that's our kind of D2C play for the next 12 months is go pretty aggressive on that, start running meta ads. We're working with some influencer partners at the minute that's gone nicely. We've kind of got some brand ambassadors. And yeah, kind of we were driving traffic to both platforms over. We want to win on both, right? We think the brand's really viable to go D2C. And we actually just had a chat today about potentially moving into some retail stores as well. So there's quite a few options that we can do with the brand at the minute.
Sure. There's plenty of people who have hit 7 figures on Amazon, but there's plenty more people who have not hit that amount. So what do you guys feel are some of your strategies that helped you be one of the ones who can achieve the level of sales that you guys have?
I think one of the key things that's helped us always has been like super high quality sort of like visual branding. I think we've got a great brand name, but we've always had like the best listings in our niche, and I think that has given us an edge. I think also we've done a really great job always of really understanding the customer. So I think you can present the same product as other people, but if you understand exactly what that customer is looking for, it just helps you really stand out to, you know, to the customer more than your competition. And it always reminds me of, I used to love your Project X, and I absolutely loved like the, you know, the coffin shelf and that sort of stuff. And I think you showed in that series as well, the power of having that great visual branding and understanding who is it that's looking for those products and what do they care about. And I think we've done that really, really well. And just, you know, doing the fundamentals, you know, really trying to have good, you know, inventory management. It's not like the sexy side of Amazon, you know, the supply chain side, but it's super, super important. And I think we've done a great job of keeping stuff in stock, forecasting stock levels and stuff really well, but also just kind of innovating with products. Like we had a product that, like, last year we were one of the few people that kind of brought a custom product to the market. So we, you know, we didn't just do the regular sort of Me Too product. We did a small customization, but to the actual end customer, it was really, really useful. And it meant that we just flew to being the number one seller at the peak time. So I think we've done a great job of, you know, the fundamentals of, like, the branding side, but also kind of staying one step ahead.
Let me pause you right there. How much did it play a role of that you had an established brand? Like, would you have been able to do what you just said you did, like, as your first product? Or it's like, no, you were only able to do that because you already had some brand awareness and some existing customers? Or could you have done that from the get-go and had the same success?
I think from the jump, you can do it for sure. I think we definitely made some mistakes, and we could have progressed a lot faster than we have done. I think every Amazon seller makes errors. We messed up with... We miscalculated dimensions on one of the products, and that came in, and that was just like about $10,000 tied up for 6 months, because we got the dimensional weight wrong, which is something that I'll never, ever do again. That was a horrible, painful realization when we did that. But
what do you mean you got it wrong? Like you had the wrong box size, or you didn't calculate the profit and loss correctly beforehand?
The product itself was quite a big, a decent sized box. And my logic was, I was like, oh, it's super light. I basically just ignored dimensional weight, to be honest. So I was like, yeah, it doesn't matter that it's light.
So you didn't use the Helium 10 profitability calculator would have told you that, in other words.
Yeah, I stupidly ignored it back then. And then, it came in, and the fees just ate all the margin up. And we one of those things where you're early in business, you're a bit naive, and we were like, no, we'll still make it work. It'll be fine. And then, like, you know, the numbers don't lie. I mean, what I will say is maybe a bit of a strength is, of course, every product we've launched hasn't been a success in terms of hitting the absolute numbers we wanted to. Some of them have been home runs, some of them have been like singles and done well, but we've never had a product not sell. So when we class like a failed product for us is just not hitting the numbers that we expect. So we've had products that are profitable. We've still killed them because for us, we can see other opportunities in the brand. We'll just free up that cash and we'll go again. And we think that's like a massive misconception without people selling on Amazon, is they're like so scared of the failure. But if you do the fundamentals properly and you use the Helium 10 calculator properly and understand your fees, then what generally worst case scenario is you're going to sell it out. You can do break even, maybe make a small loss, but then free up that capital and go again. And that's how we operate. And that lesson was a good lesson to learn, because it's given us like a lot of confidence to launch kind of anything that we want within the niche.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe some, if not a good portion of your products, you guys are actually sourcing in the United States.
Yeah, we've launched two products in the past 6 weeks. So one was about 6 weeks ago. The second one went live on Monday, mm-hmm. which is pretty cool. And they're both subscription-based products, both sourced in the US. We kind of started to see about 12 months ago the same thing as a lot of people were seeing, you know, that there's increased Chinese competition on Amazon. And we've always tried to really try and stay ahead of the curve in terms of like what we're doing with our brand and everything in the Amazon space in general. And when we started to see that, we were starting to explore the options. Like, our goal with this is we want to have a 7 or an 8 figure exit over the next 2 to 3 years. So the first thing is that we wanted to launch products that are subscription based, because in terms of like enterprise value and you know, exit value, if you've got that recurring revenue, which is often something that you don't really see talked about in the Amazon sphere in general, kind of in the beginner space. So a lot of Amazon gurus will tell beginners to don't go near products that are subscription based or they're consumable, for example. But we kind of just was like, you know, to be honest, we actually thought that for a while. It was only really last year that we started to think a little bit outside the box. But both of these products are subscription based. So we're going to try and get as many people on subscribe and save as possible. But yeah, these are the first product that we sourced in the US, which has been amazing. It's like, so, I mean, Tom can dive into the pros and cons a bit more than I can, but yeah, both are sourced on USO. And it's great being able to slap a big American flag on the listing and say it loud and proud.
So how did you find a supplier?
So yeah, with it, we dabbled with the US a few times in the past, and Thomasnet is really popular. Well, you see it spoken about quite a lot as a place, as a resource. Honestly, we never had any success there. Like there was a time where we had the MOQs are always insanely high, and there was a product previously that we agreed to the MOQ. It was something like 10 or 20,000 units. It was pretty big, and we were like, okay, we'll go for it. But can you just repackage them into a different kind of mix? And they just said, nah, don't fancy it. And we were like, right, okay. So we're kind of banging our head against the wall. So now a little known site called Google is honestly the best bet. So like, but I'm not talking page one of Google. You've got to like dig. So put on a VPN. If you're somewhere like we are, like in Spain, put on a US VPN and then get down to like pages 5, 6, 7, 8, get in there. And then I just hammer a lot of emails out, but a lot of the websites that you find down in those stages or those pages, they're not, you know, they're not good at SEO. They're generally kind of old sites, but you're finding older established businesses. So, and often you'll find a phone number. So one of the best lessons I say is like, get on the phone and just ring them up, and you can save months of time. Like one of the guys we ended up working with, had a phone call with him on the first day I found it. And we're now doing two products with him already. We've got another three lined up, and he had nothing to do with the niche we're in. We're in pets. He was in humans. He's in food. I just gave him a call, explained the brand vision, what we're trying to do. He got really excited. He's now helping us source new ingredients. He's coming to me with product ideas. He's now going to do a whole range of products for us. So that was one of the beauties, is like having that communication line and being able to really explain yourself has been massive. We are still sourcing in China, by the way. Like, we still think it's a really viable option, but having this US option as well, is there's so many benefits to it.
So I imagine that the manufacturing price of this product is a lot less in China. Obviously labor in China is a lot less than US, but is it still more expensive even considering the less shipping cost? And then you're just willing to deal with it because of the benefits of made in USA? Or is it almost the same once you consider the savings in importation and customs and shipping?
For these particular products, it was the same pretty much, to be honest. Like because the angle we're going for with art is we're definitely hammering the US sourced angle, and they're quite natural, the products. So we're looking to play into that kind of health angle and like locally sourced. So it works really well. And then as well, one of the other benefits is like the cash conversion cycle is so short. So obviously from China, your cash is tied up for potentially 2-3 months.
Yep.
Difficult to get payment terms sometimes out of China. Obviously after a while, you can get them. In the US, these guys on the first phone call, like, do you offer terms? Yeah, net 30 from day one. That was unbelievable. So that to us is like, it makes it so much easier to handle the inventory management. You can make smaller orders more regularly as well. I mean, you're getting that cash back in your pocket, so you can grow the business. So you can almost accept lower margins because you're getting that cash moved through so much quicker.
Part of the whole cash flow thing also is how sellers are now having to pay more attention to, you know, low inventory fees and also the, you know, shipment placement fees and things like that. How, you know, it's still very, very new at the time of us recording this podcast. But how have you guys been, how has that affected your business, if at all? Like, have you had any shipments since these new things are coming into place with the placement fees? And or I know Amazon hasn't charged the low inventory fees yet, but have you looked at those previews to see if you would have gotten hit this month with those? And just what's your game plan? Like some people are like, oh my goodness, it's the end of the world. But I think other people are like, okay, yeah, you know, it actually kind of offsets with the lower fees, and I can do this, that, and the other thing to kind of offset it. What's your game plan like?
If you spend any time on Twitter, like the sky is falling, you know, and people are really panicking about it. Like, I mean, we're yet to see the kind of the full extent, I think, of exactly what it's going to be. Like, I think a lot of the fees are still really confusing, even for people that have been in the game for, you know, 10 years, people are saying they're still trying to figure out the fees. So honestly, we're still kind of figuring them out as well. The other thing is, like, what we've always tried to do is, we're always looking for a way to gain an advantage. And I think if you're still doing Amazon in the, you know, the traditional private label way, I think, you know, you can still make money. There's always going to be an opportunity to do that. But like, if you really want to, you know, go for and have big swings and grow 7 and 8 figure brands, you've got to be a little bit more sophisticated. And I think honestly, a lot of the old school Amazon, like, dinosaurs that are complaining about a lot of this stuff, they've not sort of, they've not stepped up and sort of evolved, I don't think. Like, a lot of them are still doing the traditional private label route. What we're trying to do now is we're trying to build an actual brand, not just selling products on Amazon. So we're looking to move into retail. We're looking to build a D2C presence. You know, we're looking to run external advertising, work with influencers. I think one of the key things that you can do to really, really have a competitive edge is drive branded search on Amazon. So if you look at a lot of the big supplement brands these days, the way that they win those categories is because they've got 40,000 people every single month already searching for their brand. So whilst everyone else is scrambling around about placement fees, and I'm not saying that doesn't impact their business either, but whilst everyone else is, you know, fighting for organic position number one and, you know, these PPC battles and stuff, those guys are driving branded search. Now, that's a whole other sort of ball game, but that's kind of where we're going with our brand. And I think that if you really want to have longevity in the game, I think that's going to become essential now as you move forward. So that's kind of our approach to it is, you know, everybody is going to be facing the same thing. Everybody's going to be facing these new fees. I think the prices are just going to get, like, they're just going to rise on Amazon in general.
Yeah.
I don't know if Amazon are going to react. There's a lot of noise about, you know, petitions and complaining to, you know, the CEO and all that. There could be a chance that Amazon might roll these fees back, which would be amazing. But I think what's going to happen is consumers are just going to end up paying higher prices because there's not really an option if your margins are just getting compressed. But yeah, we're trying to stay ahead of it by building actual brand awareness, brand equity, where people are actually searching for our products. So then we can afford to have a little bit of a higher price, because if people are searching directly for us, then we don't need to be as price competitive, basically.
Now, before we get into a couple of your strategies, you guys have an event coming up in the it's not going to be in Spain, but in the UK. Is it?
On May the 9th, we are hosting an event in central London. So it's going to be, we've got a bunch of speakers, going to Amazon experts, people that are 7 and 8 figure sellers, people that have had exits. Kind of a high level, like kind of a bit of a mastermind. So it's a bunch of our members are going to come down, and then it's open to the public. We've got a few tickets left, and then we're going to have, we've actually hired most of these things are normally like a conference room. So we've actually hired a underground Archway nightclub. Which is quite cool. So we've gone big on the venue, gone big on the vibes and stuff like that.
I think an Amazon event hosted by somebody who does bachelor parties, that could be wild. So, exactly. Okay.
Exactly.
Don't threaten me with a good time.
Some surprises and a bit of an after party as well, of course. We've got a few professional DJs in our mix, which is cool. But Helium 10 have kind of sponsored it. So there's some amazing prizes we're going to hand out at the event. So if you are in the UK, or you're actually people are flying in from the US for this. So we've got 3 or 4 people that have booked tickets to fly over. So anyone's welcome. I guess we'll put a link, or you should jump on our website and you can grab a ticket. But yeah, excited to meet. You know,
what's the website to go see the information?
If you jump on honestfba.com, or you can jump on our YouTube, awesome. HonestFBA, and you can find us.
Nice. All right. Speaking of events in Europe, hopefully I'm going to see you guys at our locally to you in Madrid, Spain, on May 28th. So if anybody's interested to a first ever Helium 10 event in Spain, it'll be on May 28th. And for tickets to that, you can go to h10.me/elite Spain, h10.me/elite Spain. We got some amazing speakers like Leo Scovio, Alina, Carrie's going to be speaking there. I'll be there. Would be great to see everybody there. And you can meet maybe Tom and Alex in person as well. So now something I ask everybody on the podcast is, what is your favorite Helium 10 tool or feature and why?
I know mine straight away. I absolutely love it. It's the, it's when you click, I don't know the actual name of it. I don't know if it does have a name, but it's when you click on the Chrome extension. If you type in like coffin shelf, it'll load up this box and it just shows you all of the related keywords and it shows you all the search volume. I guess it's just a part of X-ray, right?
But yeah, the search expander.
Yeah, yes. It's honestly like, just so insanely useful for research, because you see all of the connected, like, broader keywords around the main keyword, but then it just throws off. Like, I remember going down a rabbit hole of like weighted blankets and then kids weighted blankets. And then you just find so many niches by seeing like 50 keywords that just pops up. And I don't know how long it's been there, but when we first started Helium 10, I don't think it was there. So I think
it's only been there for about a year.
Yeah. I was going to say, for me, that's probably my favorite part of the tool for sure.
Yeah, for me, like another the simple ones are the classics are the classics for a reason. The review insights, honestly, like, it's, that was the reason we did our first customized product was just delving into the review insights and seeing a super common complaint that was so easy to fix. And that, doing that, honestly, like I saw it, saw the review insights, you can filter it so easily, just checking the one stars, the common theme, the common words that were always coming up. And then like, watch that, sketched a drawing in my notebook, sent a picture to our supplier a few months later with this customized product. And that like that changed our business and that kind of made it real. Awesome. So yeah, a lot to thank Helium 10 for that.
Awesome, awesome. All right, now what about your from each of you, like your 30-second tip of the episode? Alex, you first.
Focus on learning skills and getting really good at individual skills, and you will make money.
Tom, you're up.
Yeah, something that we see a lot with this thing, we call it kind of the game show test with copy, and I think really often when you read copy on people's listings, if it reads like it could be like an 80s game show voiceover reading out a prize, a potential prize, that isn't good copy. It's really cheesy. I think when people write copy, it should be written to like the direct avatar, like one single person who's your direct avatar. So let's say it's you sell like fishing gear. You should be right thinking of Derek. He's mid 40s, sat in his lazy boy having a beer, looking for a new fishing rod. And you should picture him. You shouldn't say things like Tom's premium material rods are great for anyone and like anyone and anything, but galvanized titanium. I don't fish. I'm losing myself a bit here, but you know, they're lightweight, so anyone can carry them. And people say like anyone and these, you could do this, but you should go like directly to that one person, picture him reading it, because that's how people are shopping, right? And that's how you should write copy. Write like you speak. Don't write like a 80s voiceover, because it kills me when I read it. It might be me, to be honest, but I think it's better copywriting practice to think that way.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us. You know, have fun at your event in the UK. It'll be nice to meet you in person in Spain, potentially end of May. And we'll be seeing you maybe come back next year and see if you were able to hit that 2 million mark this year or not.
Awesome. Sure, thanks, man. For having us.
Thanks for having us, mate.